So I have two kids, Oliver and Mara, and the local pool opened up. And so we found an instructor and signed them up for swim classes.
This is Amy Sadegzadeh, a former Navy helicopter pilot and a dedicated member of our Arbinger team, who is even more dedicated in her role as a mom.
Oliver is 9, and Oliver's always been a guy who's never really wanted to swim on his back. He has tubes in his ears, so he complains that the water gets in his ears and he gets frustrated. And so we met up with this instructor at the park, and Oliver and Mara are on the playground, and I'm talking to her. And I start to share that he gets frustrated when he has to start with backstroke, and that usually can kind of like tank a lesson. If you start with that, he's not going to want to work with you. And as I'm saying this, he's standing across from me on this jungle gym and like gives me this look like, what the heck are you talking about? He's like, I'm fine on my back and my ears don't bother me, you know? And maybe 9-year-olds are like more comfortable being sassy with their parents, or maybe it's just mine. And he wasn't like upset about it. He was just like, what are you talking about? Like, that's not me. And I remembered the episode that morning about just honoring our kids' agency and letting them grow into that agency. He's not an adult, you know, he still needs me in certain ways, but what I'm starting to see is that there are other ways where he manages himself and he knows what his strengths and weaknesses are. And in speaking for him, like, I don't help him grow into that. And I just hadn't been thinking like that up until this moment. And I've been just speaking for him. And I thought, oh man, I'm not recognizing, one, his growth, like that he's able to evolve beyond the things he used to struggle with. And then two, I'm not recognizing his own voice in this and how he can articulate his strengths and weaknesses. And it was a cool moment because I saw something that I wouldn't have seen had I not listened to the podcast that morning, if it had not been on my mind.
We have loved hearing these stories, stories of people like Amy, who are seeing and doing things differently as a result of what they've heard on the show.
You know, in episode 5, Jeanette talks about how she's trying to help her coworkers and her direct reports grow and how she's struggling with that. And then she comes back in the next episode and she's trying to see her children and her daughter-in-law. I felt really connected to Jeanette and I saw a lot of myself in her. But the part of that story that really stuck with me was this idea of seeing agency in our own children.
What have you heard on the show that has stuck with you? Today, as we wrap up our first season, we're sharing some of the incredible stories that you, our amazing community of listeners, have shared with us about what you've learned and the experiences you've had applying what has been shared this season. We'll also hear from one of the people who was coached and what happened when he decided to reveal that he was the one being coached with the people closest to him. Welcome to Leading Outward, the Arbinger Institute's podcast, where we explore the tools and ideas we've used for over 45 years to help people solve their toughest leadership and organizational challenges by leading with an outward mindset, seeing people as people.
There was a lot of fear, like, hey, what if my coworkers look at this? What if my peers? What if my friends? And, you know, I'm trying to put on this Superman cape, and then they see this guy that's, he struggles as well.
Remember Jeremy from episode 2? The guy who, 4 years into his new role, decided not to wait to really connect with the people he was trying to lead. Well, the story of what happened after we released that episode is just as fascinating as what Jeremy discovered in that episode. You know, Jeremy, having your coaching experience recorded for the world to hear on this show is so incredibly brave. And for obvious reasons, we work hard to keep the people coached on the show completely anonymous. We don't share your last name or your location or what organization you work for. But then you did. You went onto LinkedIn and you outed yourself. Tell us why.
That is a great question. when it came out, it brought a lot of thoughts into my mind. Do I share? Do I not? But then I thought, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts myself, and I get things from listening to people's trials. But there was a lot of fear, like, hey, what if my coworkers see this guy that's, hey, he struggles as well? But then I thought, well, if the leader's struggling, maybe we're all struggling and it's okay, and we can get better as a team. And so I thought, you know, let me share this with my network. And if it just can help one person, that's a win in my mind. What's the worst that's going to happen?
Talk about that, Jeremy, because from an outsider reading the comments on this post and the reposts and the people who are just genuinely so grateful to know something that you're navigating, something that's been difficult for you, almost gave them permission and space to also just be a human and be navigating life.
I was amazed. There was a lot of responses online, but I think it was the texts and the phone calls that I got from friends and peers of mine that read my post and listened to the podcast. That's the ones that really astonished me. You know, I got a text from a friend of mine that I served in the military with, and I look up to him. He's just a great leader, and hey, that's the guy I aspire to be. You know, and he sends a note. He's like, hey, thank you. I've been there myself, and it's refreshing to hear that. And then a voicemail from a friend of mine. He just reached out and he said, you know, thank you. I needed to hear this today. I just wanted to let you know that your vulnerability and what you are thinking, and I feel the exact same thing. So just thank you for sharing that. And those kind of blew my mind, quite honestly. And those are the ones that I was afraid of. What are they going to think?
I guess I'm curious why you thought that the response would be different. And what are your thoughts as to why that landed and resonated with people?
My fears were that they would see me not as a leader. Like, they would see me less than. That was my biggest fear. And I guess it's human nature, because it is scary. If we're in a room filled with peers, or we're trying to uphold a persona, and then we're telling people that, hey, I don't have it all figured out. For me, that's scary. I think as leaders, we don't want to show vulnerability. It's like a blood in the water with sharks. Hey, if I show that I'm vulnerable, they're all going to attack. And it didn't happen.
Totally. No, it didn't. Instead, they're like, rally around. I'm struck with like the phrase that you were afraid they weren't going to see you as a leader. But then the response was, this is actually what being a leader is. And maybe it's as hard as it is being a leader because we don't talk about the things and we don't share the things. And so then it's harder to make progress as a leader on the things that are really messy and tricky and challenging because we're not talking about it. Like, it's already hard enough as it is, but I wonder if we make it harder for ourselves.
100%. 100%. Like, for me to make the connection that the problem isn't everybody else, the problem is me. I'm the one that's not being curious and learning and growing. That's not a conversation I would naturally have with peers and friends. No. It just doesn't happen. And it should.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jeremy, the conversations that we need to be having are being had just with the wrong people. It's like we're talking about it with our, you know, our friends and our family, and more from like a venting or ranting perspective of like, this is really frustrating. This is really a challenge. Those conversations, we know how to have them because we are having them, but then we're not having them with the right people. And so it isn't natural to have those hard conversations with the people that are part of the dynamic that we're in, but that's where we need to be having them.
Yes, it does no good to vent to my wife or a friend that has no context about what I'm venting about.
Right.
I may feel good for a minute because I'm getting it off my chest, but it's not solving any problems or making the work environment or the personal relationship any better Those conversations have to be had with that person to really affect change.
As we've reached out to you who have been listening, this was such a common theme. Really turning outward toward the people in our lives has meant, for so many of you, finally having the conversation. Not talking about the people we feel stuck with everyone in our lives but that person, but actually having a conversation with the person, sometimes for the very first time.
I was thinking this afternoon about the impact of those episodes, realizing that part of the impact was the opportunity to go and speak to my parents.
This is Seth, an educator in the UK, who has shared with us that he's listened to every episode this season multiple times.
I kind of like to think of it almost like a circuit breaker. You know, you're kind of on a track and there's a flow of electricity going around this circuit. And then you listen to the podcast and it's like, circuit break, I need to reset. And I think that's the impact that it had. It gave me the opportunity to have kind of a meaningful conversation with both of them separately.
I'm curious what prompted the conversation and what was the purpose of the conversations?
So the purpose was to try to connect with them. Maybe there have been times when I've carried a little bit of resentment there. I guess I've kind of got used to the idea of talking around a subject, and I suppose there was some apprehension in calling and speaking to them about it. Up until the age of about 11 or 12, I'd seen my dad providing for us, and I kind of hero worshipped him, and I used to really value my time and friendship with him. He'd worked a really tough, really difficult job. And he did it for a good number of years. He really did his best to see that through. But there came a point where he just wasn't well enough to work. Mentally and emotionally, it kind of burned him out. There was such acute stress for him that it derailed him. And at the same time as he had to kind of step away from his work, my mum was building a business. She worked so hard to build this business. I'd wake up in the early hours of the morning. I guess it must have been 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I could hear the sewing machine to make materials that she would then kind of turn into a product and sell. She worked so hard to provide for us. And then as the years went by, the business continued to kind of grow. And my dad just never really went back to being the main breadwinner. He never went back to providing. It wasn't that he wasn't doing anything for people, but he wasn't carrying that role or burden, that responsibility. Watching that kind of play out, watching the stress that came into my mum's life and the pressure that all of those things kind of put on us as a family. I'm one of eight, quite a lot of kids. I'm the eldest. But when I could see how hard it was for them, particularly for my mom, I think I must have made a commitment just in my core. I never want my wife to be in that position where she will have to be carrying that level of pressure. I don't want to let her down. I want to be able to provide for my kids. And I know that that could so easily kind of turn into, well, I guess sometimes it does turn into the image that I'm trying to kind of protect. Listening to Jeanette and her talking about her role, her husband, and seeing this play out in the lives of her son and daughter-in-law, I was just like, oh gosh, that sounds kind of familiar.
In the two episodes Seth is referring to, Jeanette works with Mitch, her Arbinger coach, and discovers that the image of this ideal family she and her husband were trying to protect and project was getting in the way of having healthy and meaningful relationships with the people in their family. What did you say to your dad when you called?
So I explained to him that I'd been listening to a podcast, Arbinger's podcast, and the effect that it had had on me. And there was an opportunity to kind of talk about that with you. I just wanted him to know that the reason it had affected me and the reason I'd be talking about it was that it was linked to the experience I had as a child and how that kind of plays out for me as a father or as a provider.
I'm curious if this was the first time that a conversation about this specific dynamic has taken place between you and each of your parents.
Something that we've been aware of, we've been kind of conscious of. It did have a big impact on the way that we grew up. Watching that dynamic play out and the challenges that that brought, I suppose there's that conflicted kind of feeling around not wanting to reinforce something that was a difficult kind of time. And yet, it is really significant in the way in which life plays out for me. But I think listening to episodes really invited me to sit with that. You know, Mitch asked Jeanette something like, what do you think life's like for them? You know, referring to that strained relationship. What do you think that's like for them? I just thought, this is an opportunity to just ask them how it was for them.
I'm curious what you learned about them in these conversations.
Yeah, I came to better understand how much more at peace my dad is. He's been able to make peace with the meaning of those things and not feel the need to kind of prove anything as a consequence. So, you know, I'm really glad for him. I'm happy for him that he's able to feel comfortable in his skin, you know, and just happy with who he is. And, you know, in a weird sort of way, I think there was almost an element of discomfort on my part when I realized that, because that just kind of reinforces that my story about those things is on me. You know, he's processed his life. He's made peace with things, and he's happy in his skin. And the meaning that I make of those things is that's up to me now.
Did it surprise you to hear that? Did it surprise you to hear that he was at peace?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Yeah. And then I think, well, why should that surprise me? Like, why shouldn't he be at peace? That's why it was a little bit of a shock, because that was that the narrative that I create, I'm responsible for that narrative. I'm kind of projecting that onto him. And that's kind of not even necessarily fair to be doing that. I mean, it's not needed, really. It doesn't have to be that way. And so I can make peace with those things too.
You share this idea that this gave me the ability to address something that is hard, but that doesn't have to be hard. Why is that? And how is it that they cannot be hard when they felt so hard in the past?
You know, a difficult conversation, it's difficult because of the baggage we carry into it, or it's difficult because of the emotion that I bring into it. But if the emotion's different, it's still a sensitive conversation, but doesn't have to be difficult. I can't speak to anybody else, but the difficulty for me is sometimes going into a conversation with what is essentially blaming emotion. So it's very difficult to navigate a difficult conversation when fundamentally, if I'm really honest, underneath it, there's an undercurrent of blame there somehow. And that makes a difficult conversation infinitely more difficult. The absence of blame makes that conversation and that connection much more meaningful, much more human, much more strengthening and empowering and validating. It's still a difficult conversation because it's hard for the other person to hear it, or it's hard to kind of bring it through, but the absence of blame makes it not a difficult conversation. The same thing is true for my children. Where I'm self-absorbed about projecting a particular image or worried that they don't think of me in a particular way, I can't have meaningful conversations because I'm too caught up in my own image to be able to have that meaningful conversation. But when that's not there, there's possibility in that. It's like there's a space between people that's either filled with kind of self-focused kind of justification, essentially, when that's gone, all sorts of things are possible. And in that space, there's a real creative space. The irony is that in worrying so much about being something or trying to prove something, it's just self-defeating in the end. And that opportunity to kind of reflect and see it and sit with it and own it is kind of the way out from it. And it's really difficult sometimes to explain that without that sounding like, how's that possible? But it's like a paradox that ownership of those difficult emotions is sort of the antidote. I think when there's that kind of real honesty about our impact on people, there's an authenticity that comes out that can be really healing. It's right there. It's right there. That space is right there.
It's been remarkable to hear the stories of people that have been shared, both on the show and online, of stepping into this space Seth is talking about, where change is possible. It was actually through seeing Amy's story posted on LinkedIn that I first learned about her experience with her son, Oliver.
I have to share with you that Oliver also read my little post.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be like kind of mad at me because he doesn't like me to share, you know, stories about him with anybody without his permission. Mm-hmm. And we've had a couple conversations about that. But I was like, I'd like you to read this. And he loved it. Like, he read it. He loved it. He was laughing. He was like, see, you think you know everything about me, Mom. And I was like, you're right. I don't. You're growing. You're changing. You're, you know, developing your own decision making, and you can advocate for yourself.
That's so beautiful. I'm imagining this interaction and just him feeling so proud of standing up for himself to both you and this instructor, and then having that be received by you, right? To have written a post about this that he's reading, he's like, yeah, I did do that, you know?
Yes, like that's exactly what it was like.
Well, friends, that wraps up our very first season. We hope that as you've listened to these first 10 episodes, you've been able to see something in your life differently. And if you have, don't wait to take whatever action you feel is needed to continue leading outward, because that's where change starts. And if you're ready to start facilitating this sort of change within your organization, schedule a strategy session at arbinger.com. See you in season 2.